come in. We are here with Senator Wilkin, Senator Cowdery, Senator Willikowski, and myself, Senator Kukesh. We have a quorum, and the two bills before us today are House Bill 126 and Senate Bill 139. We're going to do House Bill 126 first, and this was the legislation that was on the floor and was pulled back off because of Senator French had a problem with it. Senator French and I have talked about it. He did have a conceptual amendment, but it's not going to be able to be here today. He and I had a discussion with it, and I've talked to Senator Olson because it affected an area in rural Alaska. And Senator Olson and I have decided that we would not support the amendment. So we do have the bill before us, 126. The amendment was on page 4, his conceptual amendment. And the amendment would be to delete the languages on page 4 under A. The employee who is properly licensed state and ordinarily operates the equipment is unavailable, or I don't support that amendment. I just assume we pass the bill back to the floor for consideration. Senator Olson and I have had that discussion about it, and what is the thinking of the committee?
I don't support the amendment either, and I don't know the other members here. If you want to vote on it, we can do that. Or
yeah, Ms. Chair, I just have some questions on the amendment, and also I have some other questions on the bill as a whole.
Yes,
if that would be possible.
We have the member from the House side on here to answer questions. Senator Willikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only concern, I guess, that I have is, and I talked with Mr. Bannock from DMV about this provision.
What page are you on?
Page 3, going into 4.
Okay.
It essentially allows the operators of snow removal equipment to operate, and it would have, the way I read this is without a driver's license at all. Because if you look at page 2, line 16, it says the following persons are exempt from driver licensing under this chapter. And then if you go to number 9, it says drivers employed by municipality or established villages, that term is defined in ASO 421080 with a population of 3,000 or less operating snow removal equipment in this state within the boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. Is that, so I guess the way I read this is that you don't have to have a license at all to operate the snow removal equipment. And that concerns me a little bit. Is that a fair interpretation of how to read that?
For the record, David Scott, staff representative. Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, that is one way to interpret it. I think to me that means they're licensed. That's how I would read it.
How do you read it?
It's drivers employed by the municipality or established village.
Okay, so in other words, if someone was convicted of a drunk driving conviction and they've lost their license, then under this provision they would be able to operate a snowplow. Is that accurate?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. To me, drivers implies that they are a licensed driver.
Well, it says the following persons in I'm looking at lines 16 and 17 on page 2, the following persons are exempt from driver licensing under this chapter. And then it says drivers, et cetera, et cetera. I won't read the whole thing again, but I'm concerned that we're allowing people who've lost their license because of drunk driving, we're allowing children, we're allowing other people who really we don't want out there driving to be operating equipment that weighs several tons. Now, if that's an incorrect interpretation, then tell me. But that's a concern that I have about it.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I do see your point. I believe that this is put in Section 9 of Section, which would be 2, I believe, or 3. Section 9 of Subsection 9 of Section 3. I can only restate. I'd just reiterate what I would say. I believe Director Bannock is on the line.
Oh, is he?
Duane, are you online? We need to get him online.
This is Carrie Hennings, driver's license manager with Division of Motor Vehicles. Mr. Bannock has another hearing at this moment, but I can respond to your question.
If you would, please. And you did hear the question?
Yes, I did.
Okay, would you please respond?
According to our attorney with the Department of Law, Section 9, with the reference to drivers, refers to a licensed driver. This is exempting, basically, the person who holds the commercial driver's license to operate that snow removal equipment in the small area, the small village or municipality.
Did you say Section 9?
Well, let's see. This what is we're referring to on page 4?
Yeah, it's Section 3.
Right, Section 3. Page 4, line 2, 9, in drivers employed by municipality or established village. And this exemption was added to this bill to actually help the rural communities who happen to have their CDL driver is unavailable, ill, or whatever the case may be. So another licensed driver could operate the snow removal equipment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. That's understandable. I was just, I can understand the rationale for not having someone have a CDL out in a rural area. I can understand that. I have a little bit harder time understanding why that person shouldn't be licensed at all. And the way I read it is that you don't have to be licensed at all. But if I'm incorrect or if you have a legal opinion that says otherwise, then that will, I think, alleviate a lot of my concerns.
Yes, our legal opinion from Department of Law is driver means a license versus person.
Okay.
Which the exemption throughout referred to a person. This refers to a driver.
Thank you. Let me move over to Senator Cawdrey. Senator Cawdrey.
Yes, I stated this the other day, having been in the excavating business for a long while, loaders and graders and backhoes with the front bucket, they don't have a highway license on it, and they're not required to have a license to operate them, and CDL or otherwise. And so and I asked Dwayne about that the other day, and he agreed. So anyway, that's more of a comment than a question.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ma'am, do you support the bill as written, or do you support the bill do you support the amendment to the bill?
We support the amendment the bill as written.
Do not support the amendment?
No, we do not.
Okay, thank you.
And just for your information, Director Bannock just joined me here.
Dwayne, would you please identify yourself for the record?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dwayne Bannock, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles.
And the question was asked by Senator Wilkin just a minute ago about, do you support the bill as it's written, or would you support the bill with the amendment, proposed amendment?
Mr. Chairman, we would prefer that the bill be in its version as directly in front of you without the amendment.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, Senator Wilikowski? Dwayne's online. You might want to ask him your question. Mr. Bannock.
Sorry. I guess, Mr. Bannock, just to clarify this, the way my concern, I understand the rationale for this, and if it's interpreted the way that you're saying I guess you're saying it is, I guess I don't have a problem with it. My only concern was that we were going to be allowing people to operate this heavy equipment who didn't have any licenses at all, and I guess you have a legal opinion that says that is not the way that section is to be read.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, you summed it up correctly.
And so the way you're interpreting it and the way legal has interpreted it is that you have to have a driver's license, but you don't have to have a commercial driver's license.
Again, through the chair, yes, sir.
Okay, just wanted to clarify that for the record. I do have some other questions on other provisions in the bill, Mr. Chair, but if you'd prefer to handle the amendment at this time.
No, we don't have an amendment for us. Go ahead with your questions.
Okay, thank you. The looking at section page 2 lines 5 through 8, This section says the Department of Administration is a criminal justice agency conducting criminal justice activity, I guess for purposes of obtaining access to criminal justice information. The Department of Administration is a criminal justice agency conducting a criminal justice activity. Can you explain what that provision means?
Senator, through the chair, I'll do my very best to, and then I'm going to ask Ms. Hennings to come back in as the expert on this. There are certain considerations that must be given when licensing commercial drivers, and some of that consideration is drawn upon information contained in their criminal record as defined in 1262-900. That's why we need that. And I'll ask Ms. Hennings if she can add any more to that, sir.
To qualify under the standards to receive criminal justice information, this defines us as working with a criminal justice activity.
Okay, because I'm looking at the definition of criminal justice activity in 1262-900, and it means investigation, identification, apprehension, detention, pretrial or post-trial release, prosecution, adjudication, or correctional supervision or rehabilitation of a person accused of a convicted of a crime. And it's not your intent by this to give the Department of Administration the ability to prosecute, detain, apprehend, adjudicate, or rehabilitate persons convicted of a crime. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're looking at this for investigative purposes only.
Okay. Thank you. And then if we could go to Section 10. There are a number of provisions there. It's on page 6. You changed some mays to shalls, and there essentially are requirements now that you have to obtain traffic reports, and you have to maintain and update these reports within set periods of time. And is there a fiscal note that is attached to those activities? Because it's looking to me like there's a zero fiscal note.
There is a zero fiscal note. Okay.
Senator, if I may, there is indeed a no fiscal note. This action is indeed taking place today. However, it's the statute that is non-conforming with the federal government. As you may be aware, the large part of this bill is as a result of a federal audit. So there's not a tremendous amount of behavior change that's going to go at the DMV in comparison with the length and breadth of this bill.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that you're essentially doing the things that are where it currently says may, we're changing to shall. You're currently doing those things.
Yes, sir, and that is for the purposes of compliance.
Okay, thank you. And then if I could move along, Mr. Chair, I just have a
Senator Wilkowski.
Few other sections here. Uh-huh. Section 15. We're changing the law to line 24. A person may not drive a commercial motor vehicle. And currently the law is if the person is at least 19 years of age, that's the age when you can. We're changing that to 19 years of age in interstate commerce, but at least 21 in interstate commerce. And how do you define interstate commerce in the state of Alaska?
Through the chairman, Senator Wilkowski, the Alaska commercial driver's license will be recognized in another state under the concept of interstate commerce. So the 19-year-old is free to do commerce within the state of Alaska with that commercial driver's license. However, the 19 or 20-year-old person would not be lawfully allowed to use his or her Alaska CDL outside of Alaska.
Okay. But they would be able to operate anywhere in Alaska, even on federal roads? Okay. And then going down to line 31 on page 8, you say, is domiciled in the state? And can you define domiciled for me?
Senator, I'm looking at question in a further section. Senator, if I could take your attention to page 14, line 15, it is defined there.
Okay, thank you. And then just the understanding of that section, if someone has, essentially what we're saying here is you have to live in the state and you have to have a CDL from Alaska in order to operate a CDL vehicle in Alaska. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are there people now who are operating in Alaska that this will exclude? In other words, that people, I guess, who hold out-of-state licenses who operate in Alaska.
That is a possibility, that there are people that live somewhere else that have an Alaska driver's license. Again, this is a conformance amendment. I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing, but the entire concept is to utilize the federal government's language. One person, one driving record, and the one is established in their state of domicile.
Okay. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad thing either. I'm just trying to understand what it means. The next section, section 16, talks about currently you can lose your license, your CDL, if you are convicted in a court. Is that correct?
I'm going to defer this section to Ms. Hennings, if I may, sir.
Yes, this section gives the administrative authority for us to do the disqualifications after a court conviction.
Okay.
The CDL rules are somewhat complex, and for judges to apply those rules was problematic. And after conviction, administratively, we would just take the disqualification action based on the court conviction.
Who takes that? What's considered an administrative action?
Well, below it lists the different infractions or crimes that would require a disqualification under the federal regulations. And currently, the courts were supposed to be applying these penalties, but as I said, it's somewhat complex and somewhat confusing. So it was determined that administratively we take the action after the judge convicted them and they were found guilty.
Okay, but I just want to make sure we understand what we're doing here, because what we're saying is, in addition to any court action or administrative action in this state or any other jurisdiction. So essentially the way I read this is, you could have some administrative bureaucrat in Alabama take away your license and you lose your Alaska CDL. Is that an accurate statement?
That is correct.
So essentially Alaska is giving up its sovereignty to any little small little community anywhere in the United States, any little administrative bureaucrat.
No, sir. Currently, under the Driver's License Compact, we have reciprocity with the other states, and we will not license a driver who comes to Alaska who is suspended or revoked in another jurisdiction.
But this is not necessarily suspended or revoked, because then you list a number of things that you can have your license lost for, and one of them is a serious traffic violation in number 6.
Correct. And we're currently, that process is in place.
You could have someone, I mean, if you look at number 8.
You go out of state and create bad driving behavior or ticketed and convicted, that conviction is sent to the state of Alaska and it goes on your Alaska driving record.
If you look at section 8, if someone goes to Mississippi and operates their commercial vehicle in violation of a state regulation in Mississippi, then some administrative and there's an administrative conviction, then they lose their license in Alaska. And we have absolutely no say over that.
Oh, that's correct. these provisions are specific to specific actions.
The difference.
It's not new language.
Yeah, well, I just, for the record, I guess I just have some serious concerns over the fact that we are essentially giving away our sovereignty. We are allowing any bureaucrat in any little small town in the United States to take away the driver's license of an Alaskan resident. We are essentially federalizing small town administrative bureaucrats. And I have some concerns over that.
Mr. Benak, would you like to comment on that statement?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know that I necessarily concur. Let's keep in mind that the last two points that were raised are not necessary. They're not part of HB 126, and in fact, they are the law today. The one part that I will stand on my political soapbox and slightly agree with the senator. There is federalism here. Federalism has always been here as it pertains to commercial driver's licenses, which is what makes an Alaska driver's license a viable document in every one of the other United States. I believe that all of our drivers are keenly aware of that, and also every other state has rules just like this. So I don't think that it's necessarily fair, and perhaps I'm mischaracterizing it, what the senator's example is, but I to suggest that some non-essential bureaucratic administrative action would have some unfair effect on a Alaska driver, I don't believe is a fair characterization.
Mr. Chair, if I could, how many states have enacted this type of legislation?
50.
50 states?
Yes, sir.
I just read a document that said 4 states have enacted it, and Kentucky has a resolution opposing this.
Senator, I'm not familiar with what document you're looking at, but there is not a state in the United States of America that does not have commercial driver's license rules nearly verbatim to these rules. That's why this language came from the federal government.
Well, that's not what I read, Mr. Banik.
Mr. Banik, this is Senator Kukesh. Is it the intention of this language to get us in compliance with federal law?
Senator, that's correct.
Any other questions for Mr. Banik or on the bill? Do you have anything you want to say in closing? Okay. Anything else, Senator Wilkowski?
No. I just again, I just have some strong reservations about. This is Big Brother. This is federalizing our sovereign state rights, and I have some serious concerns over it. I have serious concerns over the fact that Alaskans can potentially lose their driver's license, and I don't care if the federal government said this. I don't care if this is a federal law that is requiring this. The federal government should not be taking away states' rights, and that is exactly what they're doing here. They're federalizing driver's licenses, which have always been a state right, and I just have serious concerns over where we're headed.
Thank you. Mr. Banik, is the intention to get us into compliance with federal law, and does that tie at all to any of the federal dollars we get as a state?
Mr. Chairman, yes and yes, to the tune of $7 million in the first year, $14 million in the second year. And perhaps, as I testified earlier, perhaps the biggest hammer, for lack of a better phrase, is the decertification of our commercial driver's license. And I just, if I may throw in one more thing in response to Senator Wilkowski, the state of Alaska still maintains a driver's license. What is different about a commercial driver's license is it is able to be accepted in any other of the 49 states. Unlike the driver's license that I have, which is not a commercial driver's license, if I were to go to the great state of California, I would only have X amount of days to legally be using my Alaska driver's license. The reason that the CDL has uniform rules is so that they are uniformly accepted throughout the United States of America. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the next individual who would like to testify, Avies Thompson from Alaska Trucking Association. Are you on, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Aves Thompson.
Would you like to testify on Senate House Bill 126?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Aves Thompson, Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide organization representing trucking interests from Barrow to Ketchikan for more than 49 years. Our more than 200 members represent all of the diverse trucking operations in the state and many associate members who provide goods and services to our industry. On behalf of the ATA, I thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 126. House Bill 126 is an important bill relating to commercial driver's licenses, DMV operations, and other driver issues. We are in agreement with the intent of the bill to reduce the number and severity of commercial vehicle-related fatalities and injuries. Alaska has an admirable commercial vehicle record over the years, and we support efforts to continue to improve safety for commercial vehicles. One of the elements of our mission statement is to promote highway and driver safety. House Bill 126 is a must-pass bill. Failure to pass this bill will result in Alaska drivers being unable to drive in other states, crucial federal highway dollars being withheld by the USDOT for failure to comply with the federal CDL laws, and critical enforcement tools that will not be available to be used by enforcement officers and the court system to keep unsafe commercial vehicle drivers off the road. If House Bill 126 does not pass in this session by late 2007, an Alaska-issued commercial driver's license will not be valid or recognized in any state but Alaska. This will have a disastrous effect on the Alaska drivers and companies that operate in Alaska and other states. Provisions of the bill will bring Alaska into compliance with Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration regulations, which will eliminate the possibility of federal sanctions against our federal highway dollars. These funds are currently in jeopardy due to Alaska's noncompliance. Many of the changes update penalties for drivers for disqualifying offenses. This will assist in keeping bad or unfit drivers off our highways, thereby improving the safe driving environment. In closing, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ATA urges the Senate Transportation Committee to quickly move House Bill 126 out of committee with due pass recommendations. This is a good piece of legislation that deserves to become law. I will answer any questions if there are any.
Are there any questions for Mr. Thompson from members of the committee? I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I add just one thing?
You're for the record, please.
For the record, David Scott, staff to Representative Johansson. The sponsor does not like the federal hammer that is held over our heads either. But we understand that if this bill does not pass, the CDLs will not be valid in other states. And that is a huge hit to not only drivers, but the economy in Alaska. Okay. But the sponsor does, he would agree with the Senator Wilkowski that he doesn't like the hammer either.
Okay. Hey, thank you for your comments. Any other questions from the committee? Before we move us there, what's the wish of the committee?
I'd like to make a motion to move committee substitute for House Bill 126, Judiciary, on the there's another committee, isn't it? Just to move it with the accompanying fiscal
vote. Okay, is there an objection?
Just a statement, Mr. Chair. I really feel like we're being held hostage on this bill. I do think it is another step towards federalizing, nationalizing driver's license, which I think is a very dangerous move. It's the next step towards real ID. It's the next step towards national licenses. And I think Alaskans in particular don't like that. And I don't like the fact that we're being held hostage for this. I'm not going to object to this because I do realize that there are a lot of funds that are involved. But I do have some serious, serious concerns about where we're headed with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no objections on this committee. This committee has moved this bill on to the next committee, and it'll be the Rules Committee. Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll take a minute to sign the paperwork. We're good. Yeah, we have calls. There's also CPs available now.
You went to pick up the Ivanox, Sonia Ivanox's parents.
Is there something happening?
They're going to do a bill signing.
Oh, a bill signing. You should have had the governor's office go get him.
Yeah.
Well, he wanted me to use the van. I don't need my car.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm getting concerned if he's far too long. Is the car still running?
Yeah, geez. Your own, yeah. Good, I know whose car to borrow next time I need to go pick up people in the airport.
Me too.
Pull up in the front of the van. Is he available, or?
He's coming in. I asked him to call on the cell. Tell him, you're right. Unless you want to wait.
No, we'll go ahead. You're willing, ready to present the bill, aren't you? Okay. And you probably answer any questions you have. Okay, we'll call the meeting back into order, and we're on Senate Bill 139. And for the record, Mr. Gray.
For the record, my name is Dave Gray. I'm a staff assistant to Senator Olson, who's the sponsor of Senate Bill 139. Actually, sponsor substitute Senate Bill 139. This has been a confusing piece of legislation, and for many of you, you had similar kinds of legislative concerns over the last several years. And indeed, 2 years ago in 2004, there was an attempt to better correct the difficulties with limited liability for private or airstrips, airports, air runways that pepper the state, and there's been more confusion. Sponsor substitute for 139 is an attempt to correct the difficulties on it by just simply repealing the B section of AS 09650093. And I believe that in your packets you have a copy of that section of law. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have.
And just for the record, the chair recognizes Senator Olson. Thank you for making it back here. I understand you had to pick up some people. Is the car in good shape? Senator, my left wants to know.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, especially the distinguished John Cowder, who's got a smooth riding car.
And it's still smooth riding?
Well, it was that parking lot there, that one post there, it's hard to see, you know. With all due respect, thank you very much for this opportunity to go ahead and present this bill, which is in front of you, which actually came out of a concern that was brought forth in the past legislature and dealt with the liability of certain airports around the state of Alaska. There was some confusion related to it because of a certain section, and you can imagine that the confusion that was there and has been corrected related to this portion related to private airports. And the concern spawns from something like this. You got a student pilot out there that's trying to learn to fly. His instructor says, go on out there and practice some of your short field techniques and a little bit crosswind. So he goes on out there, goes down to an unfamiliar area, airport, not owned by the state, but owned by somebody's private airport, starts practicing, and he runs off the runway because of not being, he's practicing his crosswind runways or something like that. And the instructor says, hey, I want to go ahead and this is done without permission. If you have permission, it's a different story. But he went out there without permission, landed at a private airport, run off the runway, so somebody wants to go ahead and pay, and that's what this bill was originally intended to do. That's been taken care of. The confusion in the bill that happened was that in order for the X's there on the runway, which originally was thought to have been meant that the airport was closed, actually means by the federal aviation regulations that the airport has been abandoned. And that's where the confusion was. And because of that, we were called by a number of people to correct this. And we have heard from both private airport owners as well as the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, Tom George, who I understand is online and is willing to go ahead and answer questions to that effect. And so with that, I present this bill for you. It's more of a cleanup matter than it is for anything else. Obviously, one thing I want to make sure that people are aware of is that in the case of gross negligence, this does not preclude the plaintiff from taking action and filing a claim. With that, Mr. Chairman, I have my chief of staff here. He's been working with this bill in its original form when it came out a couple of years ago, as well as this present form. And if you have any further questions, or if you want to go ahead and discuss any details, we can go ahead and give that to you at this time.
Okay, are there any questions from members of the committee, or either the sponsor or for Mr. Gray? Senator Cowdery?
I'm still a licensed pilot, I guess, but I haven't flown in 20 years. But my last plane, the instrumentation I had on it, if you had an emergency, you could push a button and it told you exactly where the closest airfield was. It didn't say this is private, this is public. This is where you got to go or get to before you crash, in other words. Is that kind of common in airplanes, in the instruments?
I know it isn't. I haven't heard of that. The only place that I've heard that particular function being available lately is the latest GPS systems, that if for some reason you've got a situation where you're either have mainly it's an engine failure, or in some cases where people get really iced up and they're coming down fairly fast that they may not make it to their destination, you go and punch in the go-to section. It lists a number of runways that are closest to you, as well as their lengths, because you have certain runways that aren't long enough, or certain runways that aren't being maintained during the wintertime where they don't clean them off with snow. But that's a kind of unusual function, except for the latest GPS functions.
Yeah, that my GPS said told how long the runway was, gravel, told paved, told everything about the runway, and then it gives the exact miles and the heading that you had to go. Sometimes you had passed over,
right,
and sometimes it was behind you, so you made the decision. There's another one right up here, so that was kind of at that time what the way mine worked.
That's a very good function.
Senator Gray? Mr. Gray?
This is Dave Gregg, and I'd like to kind of tell you about a unique experience I had flying with a pilot out of Kotzebue, who remained nameless, but had a kind of a little rough engine. And so this particular pilot was up at 10,000 feet, but he wasn't looking ahead. He was looking down. Well, we can glide over to there if it shuts down. And we go, yeah, we can glide over there just if it shuts down on all the little fields around, till made it back to someplace southeast of Nome.
Any other questions for the members of the presenters this afternoon? If not, I'll ask go to off net and ask Mr. Tom George if he would identify himself for the record and ask him if he would like to testify on this particular piece of legislation. Mr. George?
Yes, this is Tom George with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and I would be interested in commenting on this.
Would you please go ahead with your comments, if you would?
Yeah, I serve as the Alaska representative of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Our organization represents over 111,000 members nationally and something over 4,200 members that live in the state of Alaska. And airports are very important to us. In addition to the airports that are operated by the Department of Transportation, there are many more runways, airstrips, and landing areas which provide access across the state. In many cases, these airstrips are sustained by dedicated individuals, groups, or organizations who volunteer their time and efforts. This statute is originally intended to provide some limits on civil liability for people who are willing to support these facilities, either on public or private land. We worked with the legislature a couple years ago to approve this statute, which passed with overwhelming support at that time. In fact, I believe it was unanimous. Significant gains were made. The language in this one section caused a lot of confusion, and that's Section B of the statute, which has led people to believe that they actually must close their airstrips to be protected. And, of course, that's exactly opposite of our intent. So the changes proposed in this bill seek to remove the language that caused that confusion, leaving the emphasis on protecting the protection provided by people who are willing to construct, maintain, or repair airstrips on an uncompensated basis. So with that, I would ask for your help to clarify the statute and support this change. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, are any members of the committee that would like to ask a question of Mr. George? Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah. I've probably read this A and B six or seven times trying to understand it, and I have a real hard time. And I mean, what's the difference between A and B right now? Do you understand?
Well, again, there was even an earlier rendition of this statute that at that time, Section D was limited only to private use airports. And that's, to the best of my knowledge, that's why there's a Section B. And the Section B essentially said that the limitation of liability would continue if you closed the airport by doing the section, the items that are listed in parts one and two. When this legislation or this bill was, or the statute was changed 2 years ago, I believe it was, that differences were removed. But that's kind of where the confusion is caused. The real emphasis here is Section A, which provides protection, and Section B, which originally was there because of the difference between public and private, is now kind of become a irrelevant piece, at least from my perspective.
So if I could, Mr. Chair, what is the practical effect of removing Section B? I mean, it doesn't take away any liability, it would appear to me. What does it do by removing it? Other than remove a lot of confusion.
That's all I can determine that it does, is remove confusion. And as you indicated from reading the statute, it is very confusing today because the A and B sections, at least in the main body of them, are almost the same. So I don't see that it loses anything or we wouldn't be supporting its removal.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. George? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. What's the wish of the committee? Senator Cowdery?
Yeah, I'd like to move the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 139 on to forward with the accompanying zero fisc note and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there an objection?
Individual recommendations.
Seeing no objection, then we are moving this bill on. Thank you very much. With that, we have no other further business in the committee. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Did you say he landed just a